This is a reading of the essay entitled Reuben from the book At Home in the Big Woods, written by Nancy Overcott and illustrated by Dana Gardner. The book was copyrighted in 2002 by Nancy Overcott and printed by Taxon Media. Reuben. In May 1972, we packed blueprints, windows, a saw, hammers, nails, our cat and ourselves into our Volkswagen Beetle and left Minneapolis to build a cabin on our land. In Prosper, Minnesota, we found a lumberyard that would pre-cut and deliver all the lumber for the framing of our cabin. We also bought plywood, cement blocks, and string. In Burr Oak, Iowa, we bought a used door. Then we began to measure, dig, saw, and hammer. Soon, we had company. An old man emerged from the woods, walking stick in hand. "I heard you hammering," he said with a Norwegian accent. "Who are you, then?" When we told him our last name, he slowly shook his head. "Never heard that name before. It's not Norwegian. Where are you from, then?" "Minneapolis." "What did you pay for the land?" $7,500. He slowly shook his head. "Too much for rough land." An hour later, our visitor picked up his walking stick again. "What's your name?" we asked. "Reuben Blogsvet. I'm your neighbor down the hill. You can come on down any time you want." Our idealism and plans for a utopian return to nature were unshakable. We hoped to move to our land permanently in a few years. In the meantime, my husband Art made furniture, and I sewed clothes, crocheted blankets, and baked bread and cookies. We bought our food out of the big drums at the North Country Co-op in Minneapolis, where we also bought a humble wood heater and books to help us become self-sufficient on our land. On my first visit to Reuben, I brought some of my homemade bread. He lived in a ramshackle wood frame house attached to an old log cabin down by the South Fork of the Root River. He drew water from a spring and had no need for electricity. On my second visit, I saw another man standing in Reuben's doorway, a tall, thin person with long, disheveled hair, a scraggly beard, and a shotgun over his shoulder. When I approached the door, he spit out a wad of tobacco and said, "Paid too much for those woodlots." The man was Leland, Reuben's son, also known as Pancake. While we talked, I tried not to look too hard at the dead kitten draped over a fence or the dead dog still chained to his doghouse. Sheep grazed in the yard and adjacent field. The voice of Garner Ted Armstrong came from a battery-operated radio. Reuben, who was sitting on a wooden chair just outside his house, invited me in. When I walked to the door, he proudly pointed to a huge wasp nest hanging over the doorway. The wasps were flying in and out of the house. Reuben began to heat water on a wood stove, pushed away clutter on the kitchen table, and offered me some Oreo cookies. Then he offered me coffee. I delivered my homemade oatmeal cookies, which he carefully put away in a cupboard. When I was ready to leave, he told me to walk home along the road, that it might not be safe walking through the woods. By the middle of June, we had a roof over our heads and could sleep in our cabin instead of the Volkswagen. The cabin measured 12 by 12 feet. We had one window on each of the three walls and a door in the fourth. A loft held our mattress and provided a small amount of storage space. A ladder led up to the loft. We had to crawl onto our mattress. There was no room to sit or stand. Against the walls below were shelves, a table, cupboards, and a counter where we kept our Coleman stove. A small wood heater sat in one corner. We felt proud that we had built the cabin without the use of electricity. One day, as we finished supper, we looked up to find two mules pulling a covered wagon up our driveway. This was our first meeting with our neighbors, Phyllis and Bobby Norby. "Got to get a culvert at the bottom of your driveway," Bobby said. "You're going to go right off the edge someday. The township has to put it in for you. You need to talk to Clarence Hegna, the township supervisor. He lives up there on the hill." "We live over there, about a mile from you, where the dirt road leads down to the Weisel. Used to be a little town down there. All's left is an old barn and a cemetery. I raise these mules from babies. Aren't they beauts? Stronger than a tractor. Thought we'd take you for a ride." We climbed into the wagon and drove down the old tractor trail. When we arrived at a big maple tree, Phyllis told us about Reuben's wife, Leah. Leah used to wander all over the woods. You never knew when she'd show up at your house. Always thought someone was out to get her. One day she had it in mind to go to Amherst for ice cream. Reuben said they had to do the milking first, but Leah wouldn't wait. She took her purse and started walking through the woods. They found her frozen to death a day later, right here under this tree, purse in hand, with her little dog barking at her side. We crossed the boundary of our land and turned toward the South Fork on a steep, rocky trail. I tried to look nonchalant while holding on to the wagon for dear life. Here were the bluffs I would come to know well and the creek where I would wander and find the peace I badly needed. "There's timber rattlers up in these hills," said Bobby. "Gotta watch where you're going. I hunt them. Bring in a good bounty. have better luck over by Choice, by the South Fork Church. There's bear around here, too. They just saw one over by Yucatan. The mules pulled us back into the bluffs the same way we had come down. When we reached our cabin, we thanked the Norbys for the ride and watched them disappear down our driveway in their covered wagon. We soon learned more about the Norbys. They weren't alone up on their hill. One daughter lived with them in their mobile home, and two sons lived nearby with their wives and children. Phyllis raised chickens and planted a huge garden. Bobby raised pigs, horses, and mules, and planted a potato patch down by the Weisel. He and his sons ran the sawmill. We decided to plant a small garden beside our cabin. "Those tomatoes will never grow," said Reuben. "Don't have enough sun under that big old oak." Sun or not, the tomatoes grew, and we had cucumbers bigger than we'd ever seen. We decided that when we finally moved into our land, we'd have a big garden and maybe raise some chickens and pigs ourselves. One weekend when we visited our woods, we discovered a bulldozer on our land and a dirt road from the edge of the tractor path, which had become our driveway, through the woods to a partially cleared field bordering our property. The dozer owner didn't show up all weekend, so he left a note on his machine saying, "Keep your bulldozer off our land." The next weekend, a pickup truck arrived at our cabin. A heavyset man got out and pounded on our door. It was the bulldozer man. He began to yell at us, saying he needed to cross our property to get to his field, and if we wouldn't let him, he wouldn't allow us to use our driveway, which cut across a small corner of his property. Art told him we wouldn't tolerate his machinery on our land, regardless of his threats. The man, Daryl Nordstrom, turned around, got into his truck, slammed the door, and drove away. It didn't take long for me to realize that this was a male territorial challenge that I could neither understand nor solve. We went directly to Reuben for advice. "You need to talk to Clarence Hegna," he said, the township supervisor. "I'll go with you." When the three of us arrived at Hegna's, Reuben introduced us to Clarence and his wife, who already knew about us. They invited us in for coffee and brownies. We let Reuben take the lead, and the conversation turned to the weather, neighborhood news, and local politics. When Reuben finally described our dilemma, casually inserting it into the stream of conversation, Clarence thought it for a while, then slowly said, "Daryl has a tendency to get worked up. I'll talk to him about it." Clarence also told us we could continue to use our driveway, since it had been the customary access to our land for many years. Our border war was over. We heard nothing more from Daryl. When the township finally decided to install a culvert at the entrance to our driveway, the entrance was moved so that it was completely on our land. Daryl was the man the township hired to do the bulldozer work. Fall came. Whenever we visited the woods, I stopped to see Reuben and Pancake. Just before winter started, I knitted hats, mittens, and an afghan for them. I don't think they ever used my gifts, just put them carefully away in a drawer. Winter didn't keep us away from our land, although we had to park our new Chevy pickup at the bottom of the driveway. We couldn't drive it up in the snow. We chopped wood for our wood heater and hauled water and jugs from our spring down by the road. At night, we heard coyotes howl and the hooting of barred owls. One night, we heard a knock and a scratching on our cabin door. We were startled and a little afraid, but it was only Pancake and his dog. We invited them in. We offered Pancake a beer, and he drank our entire supply. Every once in a while, he stepped outside to spit and pee. In the morning, we found patches of yellow in the snow all around the cabin and Pancake's footprints weaving through the woods. One day, Pancake showed us the log cabin he had built on the hill overlooking the valley. Hanging in front of his cabin were the pelts of creatures he had hunted and trapped. He also showed us his collection of Indian artifacts. His greatest treasure was an intact peace pipe. "Used to be an Indian encampment right here in the creek," he said, "but I find the best stuff over by Yucatan. I'll take you there someday." And he did. We scrounged around with him in the woods and cornfields. He looked at every artifact we thought we'd found and slowly shook his head. "Nope, just a rock," he said. In 1978, we finally left the city for good. We had electricity and a well, had paid for our land, and had built ourselves a house. Our first year, we planted a huge garden and built a woodshed and a workshop, but we didn't succeed in becoming self-sufficient. After 2 years, including one particularly hard winter, we decided to move temporarily to Rochester, 50 miles north of our land, where Art would work to put me through nursing school. During the 4 years we lived in Rochester, we visited our land off and on. I continued to visit Reuben, although Pancake had grown distant. He was drinking more, and sometimes he frightened me. One summer day, just as we arrived in the woods, the Norbys came to tell us Reuben was in the hospital with cancer, and Pancake had died in a car accident. Our country roads can be treacherous at night, especially if a driver is as drunk as Leland was when he hit another car, killing the driver and her child, along with himself. The next time we visited our land, we went to check on Reuben and found him sitting in his log cabin peeling potatoes next to an oil-burning stove. Wasps were flying around the potatoes. A barn swallow flew in the open door and out a broken window. Reuben said, "I was always afraid Leland would get into trouble and hurt somebody. Now I can die without worrying about him." That was the last time we saw Reuben alive. I miss him. I have forgotten his face now, but I can still see clearly an old man emerging from the woods, walking stick in hand.